Okay, so it's September 14th, right, 2016. I'm Rick Hansen. And last week we started exploring the third foundation of mindfulness, so-called, which basically is mindfulness of kind of the global quality of mind. Is it tilted toward contraction, craving, suffering and harm, fear and anger and all the rest? Or is it tilted toward peacefulness, openness, present-mindedness, etc.? It's kind of basically it. So I want to talk about a global factor that's relevant, both as what's in the mind and as a way to relate to the mind. And that factor is playfulness. Now, if you Google, as I have, Dharma and play, or Buddhism, play, it's a really short list, which is really interesting, right? And so you'll get things like, ethics, philosophy papers about play as praxis, very complex stuff. Then you'll find little kids' games to teach them the Dharma with cartoon characters. It's a really, really short list. And I think that's kind of unfortunate in a lot of ways. And so I want to explore this dimension of play and playfulness with you and ground it in some really interesting science about the value of play for young people, certainly, but also for older people as well. So if you think about the dimension of play or playfulness in your work these days, I don't know about you, but a fair amount of my work has a kind of solitary, task-oriented, quality to it, a certain kind of dutiful trudging uphill with a full pack every day. It could go there, right? And also a fair amount of work for a lot of us has a certain solitary quality. We're processing language or numbers inside our own minds, or we're interacting with some kind of strange machine that periodically beeps at us when we do something wrong. How often do we have that feeling of playful participation with other people in our work life? Or more generally, I was listening to those young people laughing and playing out there, young adults, speaking of, out there on the field. And, I look back on my time working as part of a group, and there was a lot of playfulness in the team qualities when I was more in my 20s, even early 30s. But, it was a real wake-up call to explore this material kind of in advance of exploring it with you tonight. You also might want to think about the dimension of play in spiritual practice. Often spiritual practice can have a very serious, dutiful, solemn quality to it. I can get a place for that, but I was just thinking very few people on their deathbeds will think to themselves, damn, I wish I'd been more grim. I wish I'd been more somber, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, anyway, you might want to reflect on the dimension of play in your life. Maybe bring to mind times when you were young and different forms of playfulness. There's a lot of research on the value of rough and tumble play, exuberant play in young human children and also in young rats. Scientists can pick out the sound of young rats squealing in joy as they giggle with each other, as they kind of literally, their particular frequencies, particular qualities. And then you can imagine yourself as a younger person, say, and then maybe times as a younger adult or at other times in your life where you have been playful. And playfulness can look kind of narrowly like, we're all going to dress up and act goofy, we're going to have a costume party. And sometimes I observe there's this sort of weird seriousness about having fun, like on a cruise ship, now we're all going to have fun, right? Or else. And that's not really play. But on the other hand, there is often a lot of playfulness that happens with other people, and we can be playful by ourselves. I think about times I've spent in wilderness or times I've played with the material I was thinking about or writing about or imagining very much in my own space. One of my close friends is a painter, and she plays with her paint. It's her and the canvas, her and her own process, but it's still very playful. So you can have play with other people, you can have play by yourself, and you can bring a playfulness, including to things that are really quite serious. A little joke here, a different perspective there. So play is fairly broad. I want to mention three characteristics to play that I think are present, relate those to Dharma practice, finish with kind of a deep end of the pool reflection about some ultimate possibilities here, and then see what you make of all this. All right? One of the takeaways for me from this reflection over the last day or two has been to really take play a lot more seriously, if that's not an oxymoron. You know, anyway. Okay, so one quality of play, I think, see for yourself, is that there's a dimension of possibility or freedom in it, or inventiveness in it. The great British child psychiatrist, one of the very first psychoanalyst psychiatrists, Winnicott, what's his first name, Daniel? I don't know. Any grad students in here? Anyway, Winnicott. He explored how kids will play, like with stick figures or dolls. So, you know, our son and his best friend spent hours in our backyard as 8-year-olds or 9-year-olds, you know, sometimes with sticks, often not, making up stories. They were wizards. They were elf kings. They never were Darth Vader. You know, they never went to the dark side there. But they invented a lot of stuff. So there's a quality in play of inventiveness. Things are both what they are, and there's a space of possibility. I think about, I don't know if you ever read The Little House on the Prairie, beautiful collection of books. I came to it kind of late, and I'll never forget this passage. I think it's around 1890 in the Midwest, roughly. They're really quite poor. The family's poor. It's a memoir, basically, of growing up in that situation. And the writer Laura Ingalls Wilder, I think, is writing about a Christmas in which she was so happy to get a doll. And the doll was a corn cob with a bit of cloth wrapped around it. So it was both a corn cob with a cloth around it. She wasn't psychotic. She knew what it was. And it was also a precious doll that she took to bed with her every night. Right? That's the quality of play. There's a spaciousness there. There's a creativity. There's a sense of possibility. And then in our practice or personal growth, even our relationships, think about the opposite of that. Compulsion, drivenness, robotic, mechanical, choiceless, right? Trapped, frozen, rigid. That's really the opposite of that kind of freedom. So think about that. What do we bring to our work? A relationship, the food we make, the next conversation. Do we bring a quality of freedom and possibility and, you know, spaciousness to it? Or a sense of just being collapsed into a kind of mechanical rigidity? Second characteristic follows from the first one, which is that play by its very nature takes us to edges. It's exploratory, right? There's a discovery to it. There's a creativity to it, an inventiveness to it. And sometimes, as kids do when they're playing with each other, and adults as well, we make mistakes, or we bump into things. We go too far. We get too excited. We play too hard. And we offend our friend, and that's it on that relationship in fourth grade, or something like that. But yet we learn from it. If we're not playing, where's the learning curve? Where's the inventiveness? How can we be, we're not discovering new things. And of course, the opposite of that exploratory quality is attachment to view, getting righteous, you know, getting positional about our view. The opposite to it is not having a learning curve as we go forward in life. We're not discovering, we're not exploring. There's no sense of fizziness or inventiveness. One of the things that happens when people are being playful is that because they're at the edge of possibility, there's a sense of novelty. And that quality of novelty in our brain and body tends to stimulate flows of a neurotransmitter and hormone called norepinephrine. We're more alert, we're more aroused, we're activated. Second thing that often happens, especially with more exuberant forms of play, where we're more active in terms of our bodies or interactive with other people, but you can even do this in your own mind. Like when I think of my friend painting, there definitely are times I'm sure she is just jacked up. She's so, you know, alive with what she's doing. When that happens, that tends to release in the brain what's called brain-derived neurotrophic factor and insulin-like growth factor, these two neurochemicals that essentially make the nervous system more responsive to the experiences that are flowing through it. In other words, it makes us more learnable, growthable. We're more able to learn or grow from our experiences. If you think of the nervous system metaphorically, the body metaphorically is like a sponge, you know, that can receive what's dripping upon it. These neurotrophic factors promote the sponginess of the sponge, the receptivity of the sponge, so we can learn more from our experiences. If you want to help yourself learn from your practice, learn from a conversation, learn in general, be playful. Playfulness is one way to do it. Obviously, there are certain situations where it's inappropriate to be playful and we still need to learn from the situation. Like, wow, I have so offended you. I get it. You know, I'm really sorry about that. To be all goofy about it would be pretty disrespectful and inappropriate, but we still need to learn. Whoops, once burned, twice shy. I want to be a one trial learner. No cheese down that tunnel. Don't go there again. Don't talk to your wife that way. Move on, you know? Maybe play isn't so appropriate in that moment, but in many situations, if we want to help ourselves or others develop, playfulness is really useful. I think about how often with therapy clients or people in meditation groups or other situations, we're all so serious and quiet and kind of inert. And it might be momentarily sweet. There might be nice experiences, tranquility, and so forth, but how much are we moving from state to trait? How much are we actually growing, changing, learning, developing as a result? And one way, if it's appropriate, to steepen your personal learning curve, your receptivity to experiences, to being changed for the better by them, including hard-won experiences, not easy to have those kinds of experiences. We want to get as much as possible from them, is to bring a playfulness to it. Third quality of playfulness is less sense of self. If people are very self-conscious, if they're really judging themselves in the process or really engaged with their inner audience, the sort of internalized sense of others or the imagined other that they're seeking approval from or checking themselves against, it's really hard to be playful. In playfulness is a loss of narcissism. Is a kind of abandon, you know, where you kind of go, whatever, right? You go into it. There's a carefree quality to it. That's the opposite of a kind of contracted self-consciousness. So playfulness as well helps undermine the clinging to a sense of me, I, my point of view, you know, my importance, my impressiveness, right? Okay. Okay, so far? Good, zooming along. I thought to myself at the beginning of this, it's funny, just before I stood up to start this part, I thought, you know, it just arose for me that I'm gonna play with you, you know, rather than like give a talk at you or something. Yeah, to be play, you know, like that's really kind of cool. Okay, so last part, deep end of the pool maybe. You may know this term from Hinduism, lila. Term of the divine play or the play of the divine or the play of reality, however you want to take it, you know, the deep stuff. And think of reality as a kind of unfolding play. In a lot of ways, one way to think about, in my view at least, Buddhist practice, particularly kind of the more intermediate / advanced progression, if you will, is to come closer and closer and closer to reality now continuously. Right? We're more dropped into reality, we're closer to the leading edge of now, the front edge of now, we're just kind of right there, letting go continuously, you know, feeling lived by more and more things. We're getting closer and closer to reality. And it's very striking that when people do that, there's this delight that arises. It's like, wow, it's kind of ecstatic to get that close. You know, we might have it for about 3/4 of a second, Then we start thinking about it, then we're out of it. Okay, as they say in Tibet, moments of awakening many times a day. Right? They might be a little moment, but more and more of them over the course of the day. So I just want to suggest that if you kind of reflect on it, what are some of the fundamental qualities of reality? I mean, first, it is emergent. It's that first quality of playfulness, sense of possibility. You know, what could it be? Right? Another thing is that because it's emergent, it's kind of exploratory. It's inventive. It's creative. Right? Who could have invented black holes? I mean, what? Right? And then last, in reality, can't find a self. You cannot find some sort of fixed entity somehow that's unified, always the same, and fundamentally independent of causes and conditions. So you could say that in some way, the nature of reality is play. And as we come more and more into, you know, contact with reality, closer and closer to it, less and less in our own mind, less and less caught up in our own internal little movies, you know, we become increasingly play. Really far out. And my thinking about that is quite playful, isn't it? See? So you can feel about that. Okay, last notion to see what you think. You know, again, if you like, reflecting on your life and what it would be like to bring more playfulness to it and or qualities of playfulness, even in situations where you have to be pretty task-oriented. You may know the metaphor that's used in Buddhism of the raft. It's this idea that we come to a river of suffering and we want to get to the other side. All right? So we build a raft. We find vehicles, skillful means, resources, such as the classic resource of teachers or our own intuition of the possibility of awakening inside everybody, or if you will, the place inside us or the level inside us that's already peaceful and loving and free. Right? Or maybe we find other vehicles like wisdom teachings or the vehicle of community, support, or other skillful means, other vehicles, other rafts. Right? So now we have our rafts, we get to the other side. Once we get to the other side, we don't keep carrying the raft around. We set it down, move on, then we probably find another river and we have to build a yet more developed raft. As we're paddling our rafts, can we paddle them playfully? Can we bring a playfulness to our practices, to a moment of thanksgiving at a meal, to a minute or more a day, hopefully, of some kind of contemplative practice, as my personal vow, bringing a playfulness to our engagement with wisdom teaching, or maybe a playfulness, respectful playfulness, particularly, to other people, including people we're practicing with, such as in this setting, can we paddle our various rafts with some playfulness too? All right. What do you think about all that? What do you think about play? Yeah.
One of the things that comes to mind is that I spent a period of time writing poetry pretty intensively. And I would stay up late at night and write poetry, and it was a very free-flowing experience, and kind of got high off of it, actually.
Yeah.
And so that was one thing that came to mind. And there's an author, Julia Cameron, who wrote The Artist's Way.
Right.
And this would be a technique anyone could use. She proposed suggested writing morning pages. And morning pages are 20 to 30 minutes, just free writing, not critiquing, and you just start writing, whatever comes in your head. And when I've done that, that's also a very playful experience. And I just wanted to offer that up, that through writing, and I think your friend who was a painter,
yeah,
visual arts, I mean, I have a painting program on my iPhone, and I'll do paintings on my iPhone at night before bed. Anyway.
That's great. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Please.
I have a sort of a question.
Yeah.
How would you differentiate playfulness with humor?
That's really interesting, isn't it? Playfulness and humor. How do you separate them out? Do you have a notion yourself?
Well, I mean, I've always thought, like my favorite people are people I laugh with.
Yeah.
Right, because it's such a joyful thing. Yeah. So, I mean, that's also playful, but it's slightly different. I don't, or maybe it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Because if you're being playful, you're being funny, or maybe, I don't know, I was just wondering if you saw any difference between the two, or if it's just sort of all part of the same thing.
I guess I would think for myself that humor is a kind of play, right? And there are kinds of play that don't really have much to do with humor.
Okay.
Maybe, as Tom is saying, writing. Lately, it's kind of a strange example, but my wife and I are starting to watch this TV series called Halt and Catch Fire. You know, I don't know if you know about it. We've kind of worked through all the obvious good series, so now it's like the B team, but okay, it's not too bad. What it's about, you check it out, you know, I think it's on Netflix, Halt and Catch Fire. It's about the rise of the personal computer industry, and it's set in Texas about 1982, 83. There's a lot going on, but where we are, we're kind of about halfway through the 20 or so episodes. There's this contrast being drawn between the very somber, grim engineering types who build hardware and the kind of wild, rebellious software, internet, gaming types who are the outlaws. And what's interesting is when you watch the engineers working together, they're working together, but man, is it grim. It's so serious. Whoa. Whereas, and again, these are stylized things, but there's maybe some truth to it. When you watch these programmers do it, the software types, they're goofy, they're playing with yo-yos, they're crazy, they're having pizza at 10 o'clock at night, whatever, but they're playing. There's a playfulness to it. And they're not so much joking, but you can feel that it's playful somehow. Anyway, so maybe that's something to think about. Anyway, yeah.
Along those lines, I worked in educational technology for 15 years, so I worked with a lot of the software engineers.
Yeah.
And part of our culture very much was like work like crazy and play like crazy.
Uh-huh.
And part of it was dancing. We danced a lot, but even during the day, you know, there were ping pong tables, kind of the traditional stuff you think with technology.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it really inspired our thinking. When we would take breaks, we'd play together, we'd compete, you know, ping pong and different things for 15 minutes or 20 minutes. And then it just opened the space in our minds.
That's right.
And in our creative capability, really.
Yeah.
And so at first I was like, no, I got to keep working. No, you know, I don't want to play. Seriously. Yeah. And then I was like, God, you guys look really happy. And so I started trying. And it really gave me more energy. It gave me more capability to kind of think about what I needed to do. So just from personal experience, it's been really great. And now I look for the young kids to play with.
Very good.
Take a break. Like neighbor kids.
Wow.
Can I come and play with your four-year-old? Sure.
That's great.
So it opens up this other space.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. There are others? Great, yeah.
Just an observation, the Dalai Lama is childlike.
Yeah.
He's playful. He looks like a little child.
Yeah.
And apparently he likes playing jokes on the monks.
That's right. Good. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, please.
I just keep getting this visual during your whole Dharma talk about I have this picture of it's a video that I saw, but of a baby elephant. And they just love to play. They'll go into the mud and just roll around.
Yeah.
But this particular video was this baby elephant that would just, or a series of different baby elephants trying to sit on people's laps. It was hilarious. But it just seemed like it was just for the pure joy and delight of it. Like,
how much do they weigh? They're pretty heavy.
I know. People were laughing, though.
That's right. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's
and
great.
And so you can tell that the elephant's having a great time and the person is, but just even watching it completely creates that joyful, playful feeling.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah.
Well, two things. One, I find that being outside or being active, like physically active, can make me laugh. And I don't know if that,
yeah,
you have that feeling. Is there something in just actual like movement that can just in and of itself be playful or joyful? Like, yeah, just running outside can like make me laugh in just different times, which make me look crazy. But it's just, it comes up sometimes.
Really? Probably other people have the same thing. And again, I think it's appropriate to think about more exuberant forms, especially as we get older and we can kind of get kind of stodgy, whatever, you know. It's hard. You don't usually have to convince a 10-year-old to get exuberant, or let alone a baby elephant, right? So there's that part. But you just reminded me, honestly, of there'll be times where I'll come home at night. Wednesday night is Dharma night. It's also garbage can night. So there I am outside, and I'll look up and I'll see the moon. Honestly, and I don't swear as a Dharma teacher, but you can fill in the blank here. I think in a lot of ways, if you look out at the world and from time to time, you don't just go, WTF, you're not paying attention, right? You're not there with what's up, including the world inside yourself. Like, whoa, the taste of cinnamon, you know, an experience, the sensation on my pants on my knee or something. Wow. So yeah, it can also be not so exuberant, and where there's like awe is a kind of play, if you think of it. You're right in an edge, it's exploratory, there's not much sense of self in it. Yeah. What about bringing more play into your work, your relationships, your serious relationships, your significant others, or your Dharma practice, or anything else? Yeah.
Well, I think what I was going to say might feed into that question.
Yeah.
Is that in improv, I think the rule is you never say no. You can't reject a suggestion. You have to take it to the next opening.
Yeah. That's great. That's a great analogy. Say yes.
A big yes.
Yes.
A big opening.
Yeah.
A big exploration.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really true. I think it's also possible as you get maybe calmer, because that often will happen in practice, or kind of there's more of a peacefulness or tranquility, you know, and even-keeledness. I've been reflecting on how to have both that quality of kind of calming, tranquilizing, you know, that does naturally happen maybe. You become more serene somehow. And still be playful inside yourself. I want to name that. It's okay. If you find you are getting calmer, more serene, more tranquil perhaps, not because you're numbing out or suppressing anything, more like just the sediments are settling in the pond of the mind, you know, it's getting more peaceful fundamentally. It doesn't mean you're not playful. You could still have a fundamental playfulness, a delight in the midst of that peacefulness. Right. So, yeah.
I was, as you were talking, I was thinking about the issue of play and work, and I have a sometimes somber and serious place that I work, which is a psychiatric hospital.
And I'm
an adolescent unit, unlock adolescent unit, and I've always wanted to work in a hospital because I like that social scene. I can't be one of these therapists who sits in an office with one person. It's just not me. But I'm just thinking, as you're talking about how we have created play, and one of the things that we do is we have this game that we call the reframe game. And whenever somebody says something, a parent, or we have to go to court frequently, or have these very serious meetings, or the administration, when they say something and we start to swear at them in our head, we have the game where we have to reframe it and say to them, "That is such a good point. I'm so glad you brought that up." And then we report back to our team, and we are like hysterically laughing all the time. Like, I had to go to court today, and the judge was telling me what medications I can and can't prescribe. And so there were a lot of swears coming up in my head. And so I kept saying, "I'm so glad you asked that, Judge. It's such a good question. A lot of people have that question." I counted the times. And then I went back to my team and said, "Thank you so much for this game, because I actually got everything I wanted for my client." But I'm just thinking, that's actually a game that we play, and it gives me energy, and I think, oh my God, this works. You know, instead of me saying, like, "Judge, what medical school did you go to?" You know, and getting kicked out of the court. You know, and I was thinking, and I get energized, and I get excited, and I get what I want, you know? And it was, I was laughing, hysterically laughing with my team about this today, and they were giving their own examples. So I was thinking, you know, it's a good thing to cultivate because
that's
really
great.
Works.
Thank you. You might also think about personal relationships, even romantic relationships. You know, expressing desires to play more with your partner, to be playful, right? Or to be more receptive to bids for play. Yeah. People can have a very loving, secure, respectful, long-term relationship that has very little playfulness in it. And thinking about what we lose when we don't have a co-enthusiast, at least, and maybe the play is just play with the mind or play with words or play of the body or shared delight in some activity, you know, or play about the grandkids or something like that. But I think about that. Again, you might think about that. Do you feel at all stagnant? The great psychoanalyst Erik Erikson described middle age. Most of us are in middle age. Some of us are in early middle age. Some of us are in late middle age. But anyway, and Erikson described middle age as this balance or tension, if you will, or dialectic between generativity and stagnation. And there can be a quality of, there's nothing bad that's happening, but a kind of stagnation sometimes can start sifting into our work life or our romantic relationships. And that's something too to reflect on. Or, frankly, into our practice. We dutifully do the same spiritual or contemplative or religious practice, but it's not as playful or generative as it might be or was once. What do you make about that? Yeah.
Oh.
Or anything. Anything. Be playful. It's all okay. Mm-hmm. Right.
Related to being in a relationship with someone, naming that as a value.
Yeah.
And so you put on some sitcom, you know, some of it's mildly funny and, you know, and so on. But it's like naming that as a value and permission, and then when the other person sees that you're laughing hard, they go, oh, yeah, that's right. I mean, I'm myself very analytical, but I think, you know, oh, that's my first laugh of the day.
Yeah.
Just having that word, you know, fun, playful, laughter, that's a goal. So if you can, it's a desirable pursuit.
Sure.
I mean, it's great if it's just natural and it happens, but if it doesn't, it's like a reminder. It's like helps you chart your course.
Right.
For greater fun. And then it's also an event. You know, oh, guess what happened to me? Yeah, that's so hard. So it's, I think naming it, which is, you know, more analytical and so on, but the shared values, and it opens up. It doesn't have to be hysterically funny and witty and smart and whatever your humor is.
Yeah.
It's just about laughing and enjoying.
That's great. Thank you. I think about how poignant it is for a little kid, you know, to come over to a neighbor, knock on the door and say, will you play with me? Isn't it so sweet? And yet, and as adults, we do get bids like that, that fundamentally, maybe they're more guarded or, you know, diplomatically expressed or something, or covert, but they're kind of like, hey, you want to come out and play? You
know? They like hang out now.
Yeah, and being receptive to that, picking up on those. How about two more people, then we'll wrap up. Yeah, first you, then you.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you were talking about Erik Erikson and development. It seems like the playfulness is related to the child or the young animal.
Yeah.
And, you know, you always see, and I remember watching movies and you know, the little animals would be playing, fighting, you know, and then the person would come on and say, they look like they're playing, but they're really just practicing their survival skills.
And they usually sound so grim, right? Right?
Yeah.
What a downer, man.
Right.
Quit raining on my parade. Yeah.
But regarding, there seems to be like a developmental level where the play is open and yet we're not playing all the time. We are doing these other tasks too, but that's always there as an aspect of our creativity. And then if you're traumatized at that particular age, you don't play so well.
No, that's right.
have to do a lot of therapy.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you. And last person, great.
I think sometimes it involves giving each other permission to break the rules, so to speak.
Yeah.
The unwritten rules or the... I was thinking, I saw a performance poetry event once, and there was a woman who was all dressed up in white, totally white shoes, white dress, just perfectly manicured white, and she had a big bowl of mud in front of her, and she started taking the mud out and just smearing it all over herself. And first of all, it was so much fun to watch. And then she passed the mud around. So everybody in the audience had a chance to smear it. And, you know, it was just incredibly liberating. You know, because
that's
some
great.
Of the rules are so... They're I don't know, they keep you so uptight.
Yeah.
You know, they're so the opposite, and to just... kind of open up the possibility of something different. You know,
that's
enter
great.
The unknown or feel what it feels like to do this.
Play in the mud.
Play in the mud. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. Well, thank you. That's a really lovely image, actually, to end on, right?
Yeah.
How about we sit, you know, for a minute or so, let it sink in. And... great. Care.